Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What would you miss about Texas food if you moved away? When Lisa Fain left Houston at the age of 25 to live and work in New York City, she imagined the excitement and novelty of the Big Apple would be more than enough to keep her satisfied. But while she relished the sights and sounds of her newly adopted home, she found herself longing for the tastes of Texas that she'd almost taken for granted growing up. Frito pie, biscuits and gravy, refried beans, and really excellent gas station tacos. Having once ventured into New Jersey in the vain hope of tracking down a can of Rotel chili, Fain decided to learn to cook the foods that tasted like home. And in 2005, she began sharing her experiences on her critically acclaimed Homesick Texan blog. She's just put some of her favorite recipes into a new cookbook by the same name and is in town for an appearance tonight at 7 at the Le Creuset store on Lover's Lane in Dallas. Lisa, welcome to Think.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you didn't move to New York City. You know, you're 25. You don't think you're going to miss home. What do you think the food? What was it about the food in particular that made you really long for that?
The thing about Texas food is, for me, was it just evoked all sorts of memories. You know, going to a Mexican restaurant with your friends and sitting on the patio and having queso and margaritas, or you know, going to my grandma's farm and having chocolate pie, and all of these things I couldn't have in New York, you know, unless I made them myself. And at first I thought it was just like the specific enchiladas or, you know, chicken fried steak that I missed. But the more I cooked and the more I shared food and memories with both New Yorkers and my Texas friends in New York, we realized that the food was a conduit to home, mm-hmm. you know, where we were away from. So that's kind of what the food ended up symbolizing.
Do people in New York have a really skewed perspective on what Texas food might be?
Pretty much. I mean, they think of it. Well, the thing about their perception on Texas food, if they've never been to Texas, mm-hmm. is that the Tex-Mex in New York is awful. You know,
yeah,
it's just like
Velveeta and
at its most base. And you know, the worst, the best Tex-Mex in New York, I mean, would be the worst Tex-Mex in Texas. So, you know, this is what they've eaten all their lives, thinking this is what we eat in Texas. So they all think it's just really awful. And so they were like, why would you be missing this food? It's really terrible. And so for me, a part of it was kind of an education program. Like, let me just show you really how good it can be. And so from there, that's how that all evolved and everything.
And you couldn't necessarily find the exact same ingredients that would be in any grocery store here.
That's true. You had mentioned Rotel at the beginning, and that was something that I couldn't find in any grocery store. And there was this, a few years ago, probably about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, there was this new international grocery store in New Jersey. And I read about it in the New York Times, and I really, really wanted Rotel. I mean, you know, my mom would send me care packages, or mm-hmm. when people came to visit, they'd give me Rotel. But, you know, everyone knows that you can't have, like, your classic queso without the Rotel. So I took the PATH train, which is, you know, public transportation in New Jersey, because I didn't have a car. And it turns out the big grocery store was about a mile away from the train station. And it was winter, and it was raining, but I was just, like, so determined. So I was walking along this freeway, you know, to this international grocery store, because I just knew that they would have Rotel. Unfortunately, I didn't call beforehand, and I get in there, and they did not have any Rotel. So it was just this kind of like depressing, sad adventure. And actually, you can find Rotel a little bit easier now in New York. But that was kind of like, you know, this one moment where I realized, you know, it really is different up there. So,
and when you decided to start blogging about it, I mean, who did you think would read your blog?
I thought my friends and my family. I mean, mm-hmm. I did not do this with any sort of grand plan.
Yeah.
I actually got pretty fortunate with the name Homesick Texan, because, mm-hmm. you know, it actually stand, you know, it means something instead of like Lisa's Kitchen.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I think, you know, the way the internet works, because I had such a good name that, you know, it started appearing in Google searches, and, you know, people started seeing, you know, the recipes and things like that. And also with food blogging, though, it's a very warm and welcoming community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people leave comments on other people's blogs, and even if they weren't from Texas per se, you know, just they were attracted to, you know, the stories and the comfort food and things like that. And so that's just kind of how the audience grew. And then it also turns out that there are a lot of homesick Texans around the world, you know. And so, I mean, maybe if they plug that into Google, or if they were looking for a recipe, they found it. So suddenly, you know, it was way beyond my friends and family. It was just all these people I had, you know, it was pretty exciting, actually.
I'm wondering if you heard from people on the blog about foods that you hadn't tried but thought, I have got to check that out next time I'm home.
Oh, absolutely. I'm trying to think. I get emails all the time. Mm-hmm. like, you know, because I grew up in Dallas and in Houston, mm-hmm. and then I spent some time in Austin. And so my when I moved to New York, my experience was pretty much limited to those three locations. Like, I hadn't spent much time in Marfa or El Paso. And one recipe that I haven't done on the blog yet, but I really want to do, is apparently in San Antonio, they do this hot dog, which is a hot dog and a corn tortilla and then deep fried. So it's kind of it's kind of like a flauta hot dog. Mm-hmm. And I never had heard of that. And so I asked some friends in San Antonio, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's huge. So it's things like that, just really specific regional things. Another thing was in the Midland Odessa area, there's something called asado, carne asado, which is a pork dish in kind of an ancho chili sauce. Mm. And the first time I visited a friend there, he was like, you got to get the carne asado. And I was like, carne asada, mm-hmm. which is, yeah. you know, the steak. And he goes, no, asado. And so that's what I love about Texas, is that it's just, the cuisine here is just so rich and diverse. And, you know, it's just constant exploration and constant discoveries.
So I want to talk about this. You have a pretty vigorous defense of lard in this cookbook. First of all, talk about this before you tell us why. So many of us that would turn up our noses at lard and would never serve it to our kids, we'll stick a big hunk of butter in the skillet before we start to saute something. What is it about lard that freaks us out?
I think because it's just straight pig fat. I mean, I think,
there's,
you know,
that.
I mean, you know, it's just, it's kind of, with butter at least, there's a process, you know, yeah. it's milk and you process it, mm-hmm. you know, but it's just rendered fat. And I think that just frightens people. But apparently it's no worse than butter, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, in terms of like saturated fats. And I can't remember the scientific stuff I spout, but I mean, and it doesn't, I think also another thing, people think it's going to taste like pig. Mm-hmm. And generally, it doesn't really, it has kind of a neutral flavor. But what it does, what it adds to things is texture. You know, like if you use lard and refried beans, that's how they get really nice and velvety. Mm-hmm. Or when you fry in lard, it's just super crisp. And that's the thing. I mean, it's, you know, I know my great-grandparents use it. And my grandparents did until, you know, until I probably like the 40s or the 50s, and they really lived a long time eating this. So I don't.
But you're adamant you have to buy from the butcher and have refrigerated, not the sort of snow-capped lard that comes in the blue box in the store and has been there since the Nixon administration.
Right, because the thing about that is, again, I can't remember the scientific stuff I said, but basically the stuff that is shelf-stable mm-hmm. has been injected with all sorts of horrible stuff, so it's not good anymore. What you want is pure, fresh lard. I mean, you wouldn't buy butter on the shelf, mm-hmm. and so you want your lard also to be fresh and refrigerated and not injected with weird stuff to make it shelf-stable.
And you're not using lard for every dish. We should let people know. It's not Lisa's lard cookbook.
No. I don't use it very often. But I do always keep some in my refrigerator.
Let's talk about biscuits. Mm-hmm. In this case, instead of shortening, you use butter.
That's true. I think it's... the biscuit recipe predates my lard fascination. And I actually love the flavor that the butter adds to mm-hmm. it. And I mean, I have made biscuits with lard. But I don't know. I mean, you know, the texture for me is pretty similar, but I prefer the butter. But I've actually caught in flack from people about that. They're like, you like lard and yet you use butter in your biscuits. I'm like, I know, but that's the way it goes.
And you've also made your own tortillas, which, you know, there's nothing like a homemade tortilla, but I have to have like a relative do it. It always seems like so much trouble.
That was a huge learning curve for me. It took me quite a while. You know, the first recipe I had, it didn't work. And the thing that I learned in making tortillas, flour tortillas, mm-hmm. is that you have to wait for the gluten to relax. So you really need to let the dough sit mm-hmm. for an hour and a half before you can roll them out. And then corn tortillas is less of a learning curve. But again, you know, in New York, you couldn't find good corn tortillas or good flour tortillas. So if you really wanted something to taste like home, you had to do it yourself.
Yeah, you write in here, like, if you've never had a tortilla except out of a plastic bag, you've never had a tortilla. And it's funny to me that anybody anywhere would eat those. They're awful.
Oh, I know. I know. Once you have fresh tortillas, even when I come back to Texas, you know, I much prefer making them. Unless, you know, like I've gone to a store and I've seen them actually, you know, roll them out and put them in the bag warm and stuff. But that would never happen in New York.
I had to laugh because a lot of people come home, you know, to Dallas and they have to go to Whole Foods. And you make a beeline for Fiesta.
Yes. I love Fiesta. It's just, you know, even before I moved to New York, I loved Fiesta. It's just, you know, I mean, I've always just loved Mexican food and Tex-Mex and things like that. And that was the place that just had all these like exotic ingredients that,
yeah.
you know, I was talking to my uncle the other day and he was talking about, you know, like 15 years ago, it was really hard to find things like tomatillos and poblano chilies at mainstream Texas grocery stores. Mm-hmm. That's probably changed now. But back, you know, 15 years ago, you could go to Fiesta and find anything you could possibly want.
Yeah, and you can get like nopalitos and mm-hmm. things that are not, you know, maybe once in a while in a specialty store.
Right, exactly. Or dried chilies, all these things that are becoming more mainstream in Texas, but back then weren't. And so that's, but it's very mainstream at Fiesta, so that's why I love it.
My guest is Lisa Fain. She's a food writer and creator of the Homesick Texan blog. She's got a new cookbook out called The Homesick Texan Cookbook. She's in town for an appearance tonight at 7 at the Le Creuset Cookware Store at 5450 West Lovers Lane in Dallas. We'll be back to our talk with Lisa and have give you a chance to talk with her by getting on the line at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Right now, we have Jeff Whittington in the studio. He is senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Wow, we've got some great news. We got really close to making the goal in the last hour, Chris. We got within just like $520. And this hour, we started with a goal of $3,500 for the show this hour. We're already down to $2,680 left to go.
Excellent.
$2,680 left to raise in this hour. And we have an incredible deal for you.
Yes. If you want to make a contribution now at or above the $120 level, we have available among our thank you gifts copies of the Homesick Texan Cookbook. And Jeff, I was telling Lisa before the show that sometimes when a cookbook comes in, you and I have sort of a tug of war. I was worried about this one, and I tried to claim it, and you have a copy as well.
I do.
So we don't have to argue.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful cookbook. And even if you think you know Texas food, there's a lot of surprises in here that you may want to check out.
It's very cool. You can get your very own copy. Just call 888-694-6931 or go online and contribute at least $120 to the station at kera.org. Of course, the book's available. We would encourage you, if you've already made your gift of support or if you want to join the station at a different level, go out and get your own, get a copy because it's out there. It's available. And I'm sure there'll be copies at Lisa's signing tonight. So it's available everywhere. But we just want to give you the encouragement. One more thing, one more reason to support your public radio station, the station that you're listening to right now, even though we're nearing the end of the first week of our membership campaign, you're still listening.
You're hooked.
You love this station. You've considered making a contribution. Just why not go ahead and do it right now?
It only takes a couple of minutes, particularly if you go online. Boy, if you're used to any kind of online transaction, you can be onto our site and off again and completely done within, just a minute or a minute and a half. The address, as always, is kera.org. We know you know it's there because you find the podcast there and you interact with other Think listeners. So today, take that extra step and make your contribution online or call 1-888-694 6931.
Here's an update on our mini goal for the hour. $3,500 is the goal. We've got almost $1,000 in the door. We're looking for $2,660.
The tote board is rolling over. Hang on.
We're getting it up. $2,600 more by 2 o'clock. So we've got just about 41 minutes. Time is short here. We've got to make these goals to stay on track. Remember, staying on track means that the drive is 4 days shorter than normal. That means it ends next Thursday. So we've got to stay on track. You can make your contribution right now and help us do that and help us whittle away this $2,600 that's left to raise by 2 o'clock today to stay on track for the Think Show.
Of course, staying on track and ending the drive early is great, and we all are happy about that. But the reason that you support the station is not so much to make Jeff and me shut up, but because you love the programming, that you turn to KERA day and night, maybe 7 days a week, and you know exactly what you can find here. You can find civil discourse and interesting ideas and a variety of different views of the world. Your contribution is what makes it possible. Please go online now to kera.org. or call us at 1-888-694-6931.
You guys going to talk about brisket tacos?
We will talk about brisket tacos if you have a request. You can get on the phone line right now and call in with your question.
Okay. All right. So I'll wait for that. And in the meantime, you can wait with us. But in the meantime, take a moment right now. Log on to kera.org or call 888-694-6931. Don't forget, we've got copies of Lisa's book, The Homesick Texan Cookbook, available when you join the station with a gift of $120 or more.
Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is food writer Lisa Fain. She is creator of the Homesick Texan blog and has a new cookbook out called The Homesick Texan Cookbook. She's got an appearance tonight at the, Le Creuset cookware store. Thank you to the listener who called in and corrected my terrible pronunciation. The Le Creuset cookware store at 5450 West Lovers Lane in Dallas. If you want to join our conversation, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So I have to tell you, as a person who has been known to add chipotle powder to brownie batter, I was really excited to read your chili section. What chilies need to be in every Texan's pantry?
I would say, and you're talking about dried chilies or fresh chilies?
We'll start with dried.
I would say if you're going to have one dried chili in your pantry, have the ancho chili, because the ancho chili is kind of the base of the commercial chili powder that we all grew up with. I mean, the ancho chili is the flavor that you have in your bowl of red and in your chili gravy for your cheese enchiladas. So start with the ancho. And then the chipotle chili, which is, I guess, probably become more popular in the last 15 years, but that's a dried smoked jalapeno, and it's hot and it's smoky and it's just such a wonderful flavor. And then from there, you could use pasilla chilies, which is a dried chilaco, and it has kind of a bittersweet, earthy flavor. The guajillo chili, which is bright and berry-like, things like that. You can, you know, kind of experiment and go further out.
And you've done a guajillo jam, is that right?
Yes, I love to pair guajillo chilies with berries, and so I do a strawberry guajillo jam, which is really wonderful.
And do you use it in the same way that you'd use jam for anything else? You spread it on biscuits or whatever?
Put it on your biscuits, anything, your toast, anything that you want a sweet strawberry jam with.
You grew up with your grandmother canning things. Mm-hmm. People are really scared about this now, and they're afraid of the sterilization process and all that. Should we not be so frightened?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, the thing that's really cool about our great-grandmothers and our grandmothers is that they just did things. You know, and they just kind of knew, and they weren't so into the science and things like that. And so, you know, if you just use common sense, you know, you boil it long enough, the lid will stick, and then, you know, you'll hear the ping, and you know you're done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I first started canning, I was all, you know, wanting my thermometer and things like that. And, you know, I watched her do it, and I just realized how just easy it really is. Mm-hmm. It's not anything to be scared of.
And the recipes here are for like 2-quart jars. You're not making enough to keep the family through a cold winter with nothing on the ground.
No, and that's just by virtue of the fact that I live in Manhattan. Uh-huh. You know, my grandma lives on a farm, and I will watch her, you know, just go bucket after bucket with apples and, you know, all the things that she actually grows. And that is, you know, more of a preservation. For me, I agree. I mean, I note that it's kind of like a lark, you know, but I mean, you can just take these recipes, and if you do have bushels and bushels of whatever, you can, you know, multiply them and use the same recipes.
We have an email here from Steve in Dallas who, if he hasn't read the cookbook, maybe he's read the blog. He writes 2 words, bacon grease.
Oh. is that a statement or a question?
It's a question.
It's a question, like bacon grease with a question. Well, bacon grease is what's left over after you make bacon. Mm-hmm. It's that lovely oil, and it tastes like bacon. It's smoky. It's porky. And I save my bacon grease. Our ancestors, you know, used to keep it in a coffee can on the stove, but I like to keep mine refrigerated. But basically, if I'm going to, you know, anything that I would use butter for, you could use bacon grease for in terms of skillet frying. I mean, I wouldn't use it maybe in biscuits, but I love to like cook eggs in bacon grease, or I like to stir it into my refried beans, or even if I'm making like a chowder, I'll throw a little dollop in. Anytime you want to add like a little bacon flavor, that's what bacon grease is good for.
What's the secret to really good cream gravy?
The absolute secret is just take your time when you're doing it. You know, it's the kind of thing that when I actually had to write a recipe for it, I really didn't know, because it was the thing I saw with my mom doing when I was growing up, my dad making it, you know, my grandmother.
And did you think, just, like, there's no recipe for this?
I know. I mean, no, exactly. You know, she'd fry, you know, after chicken fried steak, you'd pour in the milk and, you know, stir it until, and put in a little bit of flour and add the black pepper, and it was done, you know. So for me, it was like coming up with measurements. I think the secret is just to taste as you go, and, you know, just to use your eyes. You know, if it looks too thick, just add a little bit more milk and things like that.
I actually appreciate it. We don't eat meat at home, so I like that I had permission to try it with vegetable oil. Have you actually, I mean, I'm sure something about that taste is missing, but does it approximate?
I think if you use enough black pepper, uh-huh. and if you're going to use vegetable oil, I think, you know, you might want to add some garlic and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, at its purest state, you know, it's just the pan drippings and the flour and the milk and black pepper, but add enough salt. I think it'll be fine.
There is definitely a culture difference between Texas and New York. I remember when we moved from New York to Texas, I didn't know that gravy could be white. And you didn't know that gravy was often brown.
That is true. North. That is true. Actually, I was talking to some of Southern friends of mine who are from Georgia, and we've decided that the brown gravy, white gravy line is the Mississippi. So everything west of the Mississippi is white gravy, and everything east of the Mississippi's brown gravy, because I was in Alabama and I ordered the chicken fried steak and it came with brown gravy. And I was like, this is all wrong. But I mean, that's just how it's done. So.
I want to quote you from the book here about chicken fried steak. Let's see. You write, the preparation of chicken fried steak is a violent, messy, and dangerous affair. But it's worth it, I take it.
Oh, absolutely. And I say that it's violent and messy because, well, I grew up. When you actually pan fried, it's pretty violent. But also, I grew up watching my dad like pound the steak, uh-huh. and he didn't use any wax paper or parchment paper or anything like that. He just took, you know, the meat tenderizer, mm-hmm. you know, the big metal mallet to the meat itself. And so the first time I made it, I did that, and there was like meat chunks flying everywhere. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is rather violent. So that's where that came from.
And is it really important that you choose the right cut of meat? I mean, the point of it, right, is sort of a, you take some cheap meat and you make it really good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to use like, you know, top round, some tough steak or, you know, our cube steak. And what you want to do is take this tough meat, tenderize it with the meat tenderizer and fry it. And the whole point is to make the tough meat palatable and flavorful. And the thing is, in New York, you know, I made chicken fried steak for some people, some New Yorkers, and they were like, wouldn't this be better with ribeye or, you know, and I was like, no, why would you want to do this to a ribeye? Yeah, you don't need to do anything to a ribeye, but this poor piece of meat needs, you know, some beating and some breading and frying, you know, to actually be good.
So we promised Jeff Whittington we would talk about brisket. And you've actually perfected doing it just in your oven.
I have. I've actually gotten some flack from some people who still live in Texas. And they're like, wait, you don't smoke your brisket? I'm like, well, no, because I live in Manhattan and I don't have a smoker, an outdoor space. But I mean, there, you know, you would never eat my brisket and think you're in Lockhart. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there is a very distinct sort of flavor and even texture you get from smoking your brisket. But I've made really, really, really wonderful oven briskets. And if you go into it knowing that it's not smoked, you're going to love it.
Talk about the Dr. Pepper barbecue sauce.
Oh, Dr. Pepper and pork and chipotle chilies and a little bit of mustard. That's kind of what that recipe is. And Dr. Pepper just makes this great sweet base for a sauce. And it's fun to cook with Dr. Pepper. I mean, you know, it's a Texas thing. You know, we also like make Dr. Pepper cake and that's just kind of the evolution of that. That's where that came from.
Now, is that something that the rest of the country knows is a Texas pride sweetened beverage? I mean, do people know that the origins of Dr. Pepper are here?
That's a good question. I think most people do. I think most people even know that it's from Waco. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, for the longest time, you couldn't even get Dr. Pepper up in the Northeast. I was talking to a gentleman who's a bit older than I am, and he moved there in the 70s. And, like, for me, going to New Jersey for Rotel, they used to make trips out to New Jersey because that was the only place where you could get Dr. Pepper uh-huh. back then. So, yeah, so that's it has been known as a regional beverage for quite a while until recently.
What's the difference between Texas cornbread and cornbread in other places?
Well, Texas cornbread is basically yellow cornmeal, buttermilk, eggs, maybe flour, maybe not, and bacon grease.
And no sugar.
Well, I was going to get to that. That's the thing. We do not put sugar in our cornbread, and that's almost across the South. But once you get above the Mason-Dixon line, they put so much sugar in it, and it just takes on this whole different sort of texture. It's like corn cake. It's mm-hmm. not cornbread at all, and it's I'm not a fan of the sweetened cornbread.
So are you a crumbly cornbread person, or do you like it to have some moisture to it?
I like a little bit of moisture, but I do like it to crumble as well. I mean, I like to crumble it into beans, and I like to crumble it into buttermilk and things like that, so yeah.
Another thing you have in here is a reference to the fact that I think anyone who grew up in Texas went to the cafeteria with their grandparents at least, if not their own parents. And your grandfather's favorite was something called chess pie.
Yeah, chess pie. That's an old southern dish, and it's basically just some it's a custard pie, mm-hmm. That's just sweetened with lemon juice, and it's just, you know, the eggs and the flour and things like that. And when people have never had chess pie, they are like, what does it taste like? And I like to say it tastes like pecan pie without the pecans.
Mm.
You know, so if you're really into that sort of buttery, creamy sort of, you know, filling, that's chess pie.
Hmm. Yeah, I had not heard of it before. And I
really?
Thought, does it look like a chessboard or I was trying to figure it out? So sounds really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And you also have a recipe in here for a lemon lavender. Is it a cake?
It's a quick bread.
Uh-huh.
And so technically you call it a bread, but I mean, the thing about quick breads is that they're basically cake batter in a bread loaf pan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cakey, it's yeah. cake-like, but the lemon bread was something that my Aunt Mary made, and it was kind of like what she was famous for. And it was just like a very simple lemon tea bread with this kind of like sugary, crackly lemon glaze on it. And what I decided to do, I had some lavender my mom had given me. And so I decided I love the combination of lemon and lavender. Mm-hmm. So I took this old recipe, and then I put some lavender into it. It was wonderful.
Is your Aunt Mary the one who sort of drank and smoked? It's yes. very wild.
Yes, she was. Yes, rest in peace, Aunt Mary. She my family is religious, and she was yeah. They were Baptist, and so they didn't drink or smoke or anything like that. And she liked to get a rise out of people by smoking and being salty.
We should say this cookbook is definitely, it appears to be designed to curl up with, in addition to cook, you know, you can have it out in the kitchen, but you could also sit there on an afternoon and drink a cup of coffee or something. Is that the kind of cookbook you like to read as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, a recipe is just a recipe. You know, it's just a, you know, it's a method and a list of ingredients. And for me, what makes food exciting are the stories behind food. And that's what makes me want to go into the kitchen and make something. So.
My guest is food writer Lisa Fain. She's creator of the Homesick Texan blog and now the new Homesick Texan cookbook. She's got an appearance tonight at 7 at the Le Creuset Cookware Store at 5450 West Lovers Lane in Dallas. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can send an email to think@kera.org or you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. I'm joined once again by Jeff Whittington, senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. We're hearing from many of you. Thank you so much to everybody who has gone online to KERA.org or called 888-694-6931. Karen Romiston in Dallas, Joanna Hathcock in Dallas. Also, thanks to Cecile Gilbert in Mansfield, Toby Meyer in Addison. We also heard from Julia Teelborg in Westlake, Dylan Starnes in McKinney. Listen to this range of cities and geographic dispersion here, Chris. And Catherine Grundy in Fort Worth. Thanks to each of you very, very much.
Thank you. And we know that a lot of you are calling in interested in this thank you gift that we have, copies of Lisa Fain's Homesick Texan Cookbook. They're available at or above the $120 membership level this afternoon. Thank you so much to Amy Schilling in Keller. Thanks, Lindsay Lyles in Dallas, Susan and Stephen Gist in Garland. Really appreciate all of you and your contributions.
888-694-6931 is the telephone number. Do it online at KERA.org. Don't forget, there's this Welcome Back Challenge from KERA's Board of Directors. It's still in play. And here's how it works. If your membership went out of date like a year ago or maybe even 6 months ago, you're not current right now. So you're not just renewing your membership that you got last fall in the campaign. So you're a lapsed member. And these words are kind of you know, they're kind of sad, actually.
We don't want to hold it against you. We're trying to encourage you to come back.
So if you've been a member before, but it's been a couple of years, well, if you join right now, KERA's Board of Directors will match your contribution dollar for dollar. That if you want to renew at the Friends level, $1,500, the KERA Board of Directors will match your $1,500 contribution today. That's a great deal. It's called the Welcome Back Challenge. So we'd love to welcome you back to KERA. And, of course, you know what you get here. You know it's worth a level of support that's right for you. And as Chris said, the $120 membership level is really popular this hour because we'll thank you with a copy of the Homesick Texan Cookbook. That's just $10 a month when you join as a sustainer.
The picture alone on the cover is making me so hungry. It's just not even funny. It's like are these fish tacos?
They are.
Yeah, fish tacos with a sort of cabbage slaw on them. And there's amazing recipes throughout the book. So if you are a cook and you're interested and you'd like to choose this as your thank you gift, get in touch with us. You can take a look at it on the website at kera.org. And of course, you can also set up your membership there. You can choose a thank you gift even if you set up a sustaining membership. So you might consider that. The telephone number to call call is 1-888-694-6931. We have just a little under $1,300 left to raise in this hour to stay on target for our goal. Every contribution counts, so whether you want to do, you know, $5 a month or whether you're ready to jump in as a Friends member, your dollars go right to work providing you the programming that you love on this station.
Yeah, the great thing about it is you don't have to wait to realize what your contribution is paying for. When you tune in the morning and you hear Sam Baker on Morning Edition, when your alarm goes off as you're driving to work, you know, and you hear the Marketplace Morning Report, or when you're at your office and you hear the Diane Rehm Show, or maybe you're the way your day runs, you listen to the Think Show in the evening when it rebroadcasts. And this hour will be rebroadcasting tonight at 10 o'clock. You know, maybe that's when you listen to the station. But when you turn on KERA and it's there, you hear your dollars at work every single time. And the station never takes a break. The station is on 24 hours a day for you every single day of the year. And we're just asking you to step up and support it.
I would say if you know you're officially late when you hear the Diane Rehm music, that unforgettable, you know, that horn that plays.
The trumpet piece.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then you know that you are hooked on KERA. But it's a good thing to be hooked on. And your support is what makes it possible for us to provide this kind of programming that is, consistently engaging and respectful and intelligent and respects your intelligence. Your contribution allows it to be possible. 1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org.
Again, we're really fortunate to have Lisa Fain here in the studio today with us. She's speaking tonight in Dallas. We've got information on that appearance for you on the KERA website. And we're offering this incredible cookbook, the Homesick Texan Cookbook, today when you join the station at the $120 membership level. Again, the book is out. It's available. You can get it at the book signing tonight, I'm sure. You can get a copy at any terrestrial bookstore, if you can find one that's still in business. And you can get it online. We're just offering it to you as a thank you gift when you join the station today. You can choose to make your entire contribution go directly to programming and not take a thank you gift, because we actually have to acquire the thank you gifts that we mail them out to you. That's how it works. We're not really good at selling anything, and what you're buying.
Clearly, we're in a business where right. we request payment.
Well, and you've already bought it. We don't have to sell you the station because you already use it. You already listen to it all the time. We're just here to remind you that, hey, you know, station can use your assistance.
Your contribution right now will get us closer to making our goal for this hour. We have $1,285 left to raise. Get in touch with us now at KERA.org or 1-888-694-6931. Remember, if you are interested in receiving a copy of the Homesick Texan Cookbook written by our guest Lisa Fain and illustrated entirely with her photographs, by the way, you can become a member now at or above the $120 level and choose that gift.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is food writer Lisa Fain. She created the Homesick Texan blog and is the author of the brand new Homesick Texan cookbook. She's in Dallas for an appearance tonight at 7 at the Le Creuset Cookware Store on Lover's Lane in Dallas. If you'd like to join our conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's go to the phones now, and we have Nancy on the line in McKinney. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying hello.
Okay. I'm loving everything I'm hearing on this show. She sounds like she cooks the same way I do. I don't like sweet cornbread. And I cook my hash browns in bacon grease. And but I do want to talk a little further about bacon grease, because whenever I bake a pie, I always choose my fat based on the kind of pie it is. And I wonder if you've ever made a pie crust with bacon grease, like for a quiche.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. And, you know, I haven't. I tried to make tortillas once with bacon grease, and I didn't like the way they turned out. But I think, I might use, do you use lard for your pie crust at all?
Buy pork back from an organic farmer that I buy all my meat from, and I render the lard myself.
Mm-hmm.
My pie crust is delicious when I use that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just real, it's really great.
Mm. I think what I would do is I might not use 100% bacon grease. I might use maybe like 2/3 lard and 1/3 bacon grease, so you get the flavor. But because there are some textural things, like I discovered with the tortillas, I don't know if it would turn out 100% proper if you used 100% bacon grease. But I would definitely experiment with it and see how, because I think it would make a wonderful flavor, add for a wonderful flavor.
I was really impressed that you've made your own sopapillas. I thought they only existed in restaurants.
Well, again, it was just like, you know, the mother of invention is necessity. And in New York, you could not find sopapillas anywhere. So I had to start making them. And it's the kind of thing that, yeah, people were very impressed by that. They were like, whoa, you can make sopapillas? And once you start making them, I mean, the hardest part is waiting for the yeast-based dough to rise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you start throwing the dough into the hot oil, it's like magic seeing them puff up, and they taste just so good.
Did you have any thought to adding any sort of state fair food to this cookbook?
Well, yeah, the thing about me is I'm
it's
a traditionalist.
Okay to say no.
No, well, the thing about me is I'm a traditionalist, and for me the state fair is the corny dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only in like the last 10 years that all this other stuff's come about.
Yeah.
You know, the competitions.
Yeah.
And all the crazy food. And I actually do have a corny dog recipe on my blog. And I thought about putting it in the book, but it just became one of those things where I just ran out of space.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be in the next book. But I mean, I do have fried pies, and I discuss, you know, kind of the whole fried food culture of Texas. But yeah, no, I won't have the other weird stuff on there. Fried bubble gum. I don't even know what that is.
I don't think it's a food. So
no.
I don't worry about it. Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. This time we have Holly on the line in Arlington. Hello, Holly.
Hi. I had a question about regional preparations of chili. I'm born and raised in Texas, and I was taught you put cornbread in your chili, but my stepmom, who's from Baltimore, puts rice in her chili. And I'm just wondering, is that because she's crazy, or is that like the Northeast regional thing to do?
You know, that must be a Baltimore thing, because I know New Yorkers, and they don't put rice in their chili. But then you have people in Cincinnati that put pasta in their chili. So I think people like to mix some sort of, you know, grain-based thing with their chili.
That's like goulash. That's
yeah,
what we called it.
Yeah, you know, add some heft to it. So in Texas, we do cornbread or maybe some, you know, Fritos for Frito pie or tortilla chips. But yes, chili is very regional. And so that would make sense.
And Texas chili, proper Texas chili, is not supposed to have beans in it, is that right?
No, that's true.
Are people surprised by that? Like, do they think of chili with, you know, kidney beans in it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times when I would make my chili for the non-Texans, that would be the first thing they'd say. They'd be poking around in the bowl. Where are the beans? Where are the beans? I'm like, we don't do that. You know, you can serve beans on the side,
mm-hmm.
but I think I read somewhere, I think maybe it was James Michener, and I don't, you know, he wasn't a Texan, but he wrote about Texas in his book, Texas. And I think in that book, he talked about how the origin of that is that a bowl of beans is a proper dish and a bowl of chili is a proper dish. And putting the two together kind of disrespects both. So I'll go with that.
Let's go back to the phones now. I am really tickled by the fact that we have people really fascinated with this bacon fat question. We have Kristen on the line in Garland. Hey, Kristen.
Hi. I have a question about replacing bacon fat, actually. I know that's thin around here, but most of them are trying to eat a little bit better. And we have a dish that is kale and white beans, and the entire fat and oil content of this recipe is from crisping out, you know, rendering the bacon and then using the bacon as a crisp topping. And I, for the life of me, cannot find a good alternative to using that.
What do you think, Lisa?
Because the turkey bacon doesn't have enough fat, and it doesn't have the good flavor, and olive oil ends up being kind of bland.
Well, that's interesting, because I was going to suggest olive oil, but if you're looking, I mean, you're not going to get the exact same fat content from a vegetable oil. And I wouldn't even bother with turkey bacon because there's no fat. So what I would use is olive oil, but I would maybe chop up some chipotle chilies because they have the smoky flavor, or maybe use chipotle powder. Another thing you could use is pimenton, which is smoked paprika, if you don't want the heat. And it has a wonderful smoky flavor. Because, I mean, what you're missing is probably the smoke. I think the olive oil will provide enough, you know, lusciousness if you use, you know, the amount till you get to that point. But I would definitely use chipotle or smoked pimenton, smoked paprika.
We should say you do have a queso recipe in here, but you don't. I guess a brick of Velveeta has not darkened your doorstep in a long time. So talk about what else we can use.
The thing about Velveeta is it is hard. I mean, it's not necessarily hard to find in New York City, but when you do find it, it's like the little 2-inch thing was like $15. It was crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. So for me, and also I was just curious, can you make a queso with non-Velveeta, with a non-processed cheese? And so what I do is I make kind of a bechamel sauce, and I use like Monterey Jack or cheddar, and if you go slowly enough, it'll melt. People will make it, and they'll be like, it's not like Velveeta. I'm like, well, no, it's not going to be 100% like Velveeta, but it works. And especially for readers that aren't in America, where they don't have access to Velveeta at all, or even American cheese, it's been a lifesaver.
Yeah, that's got to be interesting when you when you're writing for an audience, particularly on the blog, and you have no idea what corner of the world they're thinking about Texas cuisine from.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. And actually, when I started the blog, besides my family and friends that lived here, you know, my readers initially were non-Texans. But then I started hearing from Texans that were reading my blog. And at first I was like, well, you don't need to read my blog. You're there. But I mean, I think, you know, it's just people appreciate good food, good Texas food.
I want to talk about this because you give a special shout out to the taco stands at the gas stations, particularly on Buckner. And you have an opinion about the Fuel City versus Buckner Dallas taco stands. And talk a little bit about what your impressions have been.
Well, I think Fuel City, because it's so big and it's very impressive, and it's kind of right where I guess the line is between a dry county and a wet county. So there's a lot of liquor stores. And I think that's another, you know, there's always a lot of people in that part of town. And it's gotten a lot of press. You know, I think it was rated like the best taco in the state by Texas Monthly. So it has had, it's kind of a media darling. But there's a lot of great gas station tacos in Dallas, you know, on Buckner. And I think a lot of them are even better than Fuel City. I think it's, you know, become maybe not a victim of its own success, but that's not the only place to get a gas station taco in Dallas.
So are you sort of a fearless trier of greasy spoons when you travel in Texas?
Oh, fearless? Absolutely. I'll eat anywhere. I mean, you can tell when you go into a place, if you just by the smells and the audience and or rather the patrons, you can just tell if a place is going to be good or not. And if there's enough people in there, and, you know, you see a plate and it just looks good, I'll definitely try it. I'll try anything.
You and I talked about this a little before the show, but I'd love for the audience to know about this. All the photography in here is your own, which is very impressive because I don't know that I've met anyone else who's done a cookbook that did all the illustrations themselves. But you don't have a studio that you work in. You're working out of your apartment. Tell us a little bit about that.
I live in a one-bedroom apartment, and which is probably, if you live in Texas, if you live in Dallas, my one-bedroom apartment's probably about as big as your kitchen. and what I would do is, as I was developing the book, and also for the blog, I'll make something in my kitchen, but the light there isn't very good. And so I'll take the plate into my bedroom. So I shoot all the photographs for the book and the blog have been shot in my bedroom.
Do you have like a sheet of vinyl over your bedspread or something?
I actually have this stool that was made with old barnwood from one of our family farms. And what I do is I prop the plates up on that. And so it kind of looks like a table.
Well, Lisa Fain, it's been such a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Lisa Fain's blog is called The Homesick Texan, and the cookbook shares the same name. She is in town for an appearance tonight at 7 at the Le Creuset Cookware Store at 5450 West Lovers Lane in Dallas. I want to thank all of you who have called in this hour, who have gotten in touch with us via email. Of course, we couldn't get to everybody, but we really appreciate your participation. We especially appreciate your participation as supporting members of KERA. The way to do this is to go online to KERA.org. You can check out thank you gifts there, including Lisa Fain's beautiful cookbook, The Homesick Texan, which is really a delight to read through. And if you are a cook, or even if you're not a cook and you just like to eat and think about food, it is really fun to go through. So we have that available as a thank you at the $120 level or above.
And it's really doing well, I think. People are really responding. Thanks so much to everybody who has called so far. We've heard from Michael Doctor in Denton, Frank Tarzi in Plano, Carmen Diaz in Burleson, Mark Norris in Arlington, Annabeth Ballard in Heath. We've heard from Jane Wright in Arlington, Kathleen Consol in Dallas, Henry Plonge in Arlington, and Beth Fain in Houston. I'll bet there's a connection there.
Her mom lives in Houston, but I'm not surprised.
Well, she's just left the studio, so we can't ask her, but thank you, Beth, for your contribution.
Thank you very much, and surely Beth already has a copy of the cookbook. It really is a wonderful work, though. Thank you so much to Irene Enns in Fort Worth, Susan Harkins in Richardson, Thomas Deering in Haltom City. Thank you, Mike and Mary Shorten in Wiley, Carolyn Olson in Dallas. Thank you, Karen Ledbetter in Southlake and Jean Paul in Maybank. Really appreciate you, Richard Jernigan in Dallas and Annette Barnes in Dallas. All of the folks whose names we've just read have either gone online to KERA.org or called in to 1-888-694-6931. Working for this hour on a goal of, was it $3,000?
$3,500.
And we have, at last check, I bet we're below this now, we have $1,285 left to raise. Your contribution, this is really just 10 people calling in and making, you know, $120 contribution.
$120 gets you your very own copy of Lisa Fain's beautiful The Homesick Texan. It's a beautiful cookbook, and it's got it's just chock full of great stuff. I mean, we could have probably spent 2 hours with Lisa on the topics that are just in her book. And, you know, she's a certified barbecue judge.
I know.
And
it makes me want to start eating pork again.
Well, the book is great. And you know what? You also get really what many of you tell us is the greatest radio station in North Texas. KERA, it's here every day. When you turn on the radio dial, when you start up your car, if KERA is after the crank of the engine, KERA is the first thing you hear, you should contribute. When you wake up in the morning, before your feet even hit the floor, you're already hearing KERA on your clock alarm, you should contribute.
If Sam Baker's voice wakes you up and not your significant other.
That's right. When you log into iTunes or whatever your MP3 playing program is, and it automatically downloads Think podcasts from KERA or the Anything You Ever Wanted to Know podcast, you should contribute. It's really easy to do. And look, Chris, we've made incredible progress. We got a new update, $405 left to raise in this hour to make the goal to stay on track to finish the drive early. I'd say we should try to, you know, do that and even do more because we didn't quite make it in the last hour.
Yeah. So, in fact, we were about 500 short last hour.
We were. So please do your part right now. Please call 888-694-6931 or go online to KERA.org. I'm telling you, all the authors that we've had on the show this week and the books are great, but this one is really, really great.
1-888-694-6931 is our telephone number. You can also go online to KERA.org. The level to receive The Homesick Texan as your thank you gift, the cookbook, is $120 or above. You know, that's super easy to do if you set up a sustaining membership for yourself, which can now be drawn right off your – so many of us use credit and debit cards now as opposed to our checking accounts. There's now an easy way to do this. You can set it up and choose this as your thank you gift, and then you don't even hardly know. Notice, you know, $10 or $20 coming out of your check every month. But you do notice the great radio that you listen to. You would certainly notice if KERA were not here. So please think about making a contribution now because public radio is a big part of your life. Go online to KERA.org.
Online at KERA.org. On the phone, 888-694-6931. If you're like me and you haven't had lunch yet, this is going to be torture. But here are just a couple of recipes in the Tex-Mex section. Cheese enchiladas with chili con carne, spinach and mushroom enchiladas with tomatillo salsa. That one's a couple of pages long. Sour cream, chicken enchiladas. West Texas stacked enchiladas.
They have a recipe from El Paso for salpicón, which is like a really good shredded beefy salad thing.
Awesome, awesome. Soft cheese tacos, of course. It's chalupas are in here. Tacos al carbón. Small apartment style. This is a great book. It's a great gift for someone who loves Tex-Mex food or Texas food because it covers the gamut. And, you know, just like the Think Show, covers the gamut, covers the waterfront, covers the range, whatever it is you want to say.
From Democratic politics in the mid-20th century.
That's right.
To Texas cooking.
It's all about you, and it's all about KERA. Do your part right now. Call 888-694-6931 or contribute at KERA.org.
Do keep in mind that if your membership has lapsed from before and you come back to us as a supporting member, you can receive sort of a bonus, actually the station will receive, from the board challenge, KERA board board of directors are trying to welcome back those who have let their memberships lapse a little bit. So rejoin the station today, even as a Friends member, and the board of directors of KERA will match your contribution dollar for dollar.
This is your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton. Online, of course, at KERA.org, where you can make your contribution. You can also call 888-694-6931. Folks, we have $405 left to raise in this hour. About a minute to do it. Please be the next one to call, 888-694-6931.
Remember, you can receive a copy of Lisa Fain's cookbook, The Homesick Texan Cookbook, with a contribution at or above the $120 level. We really appreciate your contributions at KERA.org and at 1-888-694-6931.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.